truly. I think, you know, with COVID and some of the circumstances around how the criminal justice system was operating during COVID left a few sort of holes in the system and cracks that some of these guys fell through and were able to get out and either be released before sentencing or being released with an ankle monitor, with monitoring until they were supposed to be sentenced. A few different circumstances happened that allowed these guys to escape that I think, you know, pre-COVID wouldn't have happened. And so we have some guys that we're going after this season that absolutely shouldn't be out on the streets, but for one reason or another, they are, and they need to be captured. You know, we've got, of course, a lot of cases that deal with child sexual abuse and things like that because of my nexus with the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children. But there are some brutal, brutal cases that we have both on all sides, whether it's the child sexual abuse cases, you know, these predators who prey on these young kids, or, you know, the murders that we typically go after. There's just, we've got a lineup of some real bad individuals that need to be taken off the streets, and a lot of great interviews with family and law enforcement that are seeking justice. And so we're really looking forward to premiering season 4 and getting the tips that have resulted in the many captures that we've gotten so far. I think we've aired 36 episodes, and out of the 36 episodes, 37 fugitives who were featured on In Pursuit have now been brought to justice. So it's just incredible that, you know, the tips continue to come in. The hotline will be operating as usual, and we're looking forward to, you know, the engagement from our viewers and helping us capture these guys and get them off the streets.
That's incredible. And what would you say, other than the fact that these people escaped during COVID and the difficulties law enforcement had during COVID, what would you say was the biggest challenge about filming this season?
I think, you know, COVID being a top one, just because of, you know, everybody being safe and you know, making sure that our team doesn't, you know, lose steam during production. But I think it's just the state of the world that we're in, whether it's COVID related or not. We're seeing crime increase in many cities across the country. And so because of that, we're having more and more law enforcement reaching out to us directly saying, hey, our investigation has reached a dead end. We need that force multiplier that you can provide by empowering the public. We need this investigative tool. So I think with season 4, more than ever, we've seen more outreach directly from law enforcement than ever before, because they realize that their docket is just piling up and they need to solve these cases, and they're looking for any resource and any avenue to do that. And I think because of the track record that we've seen in season 1 through 3 and the results that the show can produce, you're seeing more and more law enforcement, whether it's federal, state, or local, reaching out and using In Pursuit as a tactic and as a tool to catch their wanted fugitives.
That is so incredible. And one thing I'm curious about, because you and your father have worked so hard in these cases, how do you deal with it and not take it home, so to speak, you know, so you're not dealing with it at home? Because I can only imagine how difficult it is dealing with these cases all the time.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, that's a great question. And it's not just a question for me and my father, but for our crew as well, too, because they're there also. You know, even though you don't see all the people that work on the show on screen, they're right there. They're sitting in on these interviews. They're hearing the tough stuff. And so it is difficult. It's something that we talk about quite a bit. I'm a big believer in you know, doing whatever you can to positively affect your mental health, whether that's talking to somebody, counseling, therapy, also, you know, whether it's sports or for me it's cooking, looking for these avenues to release, you know, and some of this, you know, pent up anger that you get over these cases, because time and time again we're interviewing these families whose lives have been devastated, lives have been destroyed, and these guys are just out there, you know, not, you know, living a life as if nothing had happened. You know, they've taken away, the ripple effects can be so severe with many of these cases, and they've just destroyed so many lives, and here they are living a life as if, you know, nothing had happened, not paying the consequences for their actions. And so, you know, it's about the captures. That's how and why we do it. You know, a capture or the recovery of a missing child is better than a grand slam in the World Series. And that's how you stay ahead of this, knowing that You know, this show gets results, and this show provides justice for families. Not closure. Closure is a word that I don't use. Nothing can change the past. Nothing can bring back these loved ones. Nothing can change what's happened to some of these children who suffer at the hands of these sexual predators. But what it can do is it can end a chapter and can help you start writing a new one. And you know, when these families get justice, we recover a missing child, when we capture a wanted fugitive, again, that's what makes it all worthwhile for me. I watch my parents channel all their emotions and anger over what happened to my brother Adam back in 1981 to make sure Adam didn't die in vain. And though he said if his song is to continue, then we must do the singing. And we're doing that every day, whether it's at the National Center for Missing Exploited Children, my day job, or on the show In Pursuit. We're trying to make sure that, you know, these families who are going through something similar that we went through, tragedy that we went through, that they can get justice and, again, start writing that new chapter in their life.
And how do you choose the cases that are chosen on the show? Because there are so many cases out there. I mean, I follow all your social media pages religiously and try to repost as much as possible, but there's so many. Of course, anything I could do to help these poor people, because it breaks my heart. But how hard is it to choose what actually gets aired on the show?
You know what? I'd say that's one of the hardest parts about doing the job, is turning down the families that are reaching out. You know, we have people reaching out constantly, whether it's on social media, whether it's through friends or family or direct to me. You know, we have people calling the hotline trying to get us to do cases, submitting cases through our Facebook page or Twitter. That's the hardest part, is turning these families down. And it really, we wish we could do every case, but it really does. The cases that we cover on In Pursuit have to check quite a few boxes. One, there has to be a felony warrant for a wanted fugitive. We don't typically do what I call the whodunit cases, where a crime has occurred, we don't know who the perpetrator is, and we're looking to the public for answers to find out and trying to identify that individual. That's not typically the cases that we do. And I say typically because we have done a couple. We have one this season on the Boca Raton murders that happened at the Boca Town Center Mall. That is a whodunit case, but that's not typical for In Pursuit. So typically, we need a felony fugitive warrant. Number two is we always want the blessing of the family of the victims. If this is something where the family, you know, it doesn't want us to come in and do interviews and cover the case, we won't do it. We want the blessing of the family. Number two is having the blessing of law enforcement. Again, almost all of these cases are unadjudicated. They have not gone through the court system. And so because they're ongoing and active investigations, the last thing we want to do is bungle a case, is screw something up because we put out information or said something that we shouldn't have. And so we always want to work closely with law enforcement, make sure we get their blessing so that we understand the case from their investigative side, to make sure we're not putting any information out there that they don't want to be out there into the public, into the stratosphere. And there are reasons for that. There are sometimes, you know, cases where they have to hold back certain evidence so that there's something about the crime scene that only the perpetrator would know. That way they can rule out any false confessions. But also in cases where they think they might know where the perpetrator is, and they don't want to spook or scare that individual because they're waiting, they're making their case, if you will. So there are sometimes reasons why law enforcement won't want us to do a case, and so we don't do that. So again, there has to be that felony active warrant. We want the blessing of the family. We want the blessing of law enforcement to move forward. And so we start the season in pre-production with hundreds and hundreds of cases and have to whittle them down to basically, you know, 24 between our A story and our B story, and then a few for our 15 seconds of shame. But that is a very difficult process. And, you know, some stories are, you know, they go by the wayside, and then, you know, something happens and they come back up, or a story that we know we're going to go after, something happens there and we have to take that one off the list. So it's dynamic juggling act to get these cases lined up for the season. And luckily, again, working with law enforcement so heavily, you know, when they provide the information and come to us with a case, it just makes it so much easier to work in and around, you know, our partnerships there, whether it's the Marshals or the FBI, having that partnership and that trust to handle these cases. I don't think there's any other show out there that has the partnerships that we have with law enforcement and the way they trust us with these cases.
And what case out of all the ones that you've had on the show stands out to you the most, whether it's solved or not?
Well, there's a couple. I'd say Luis Frias, which was our very first capture, always will stick out to me for many reasons. One, the victim, she was former law enforcement. They used her handcuffs that she used as a law enforcement officer, slapped him on the wrists of Luis Frias, extradited him back from Mexico to the United States, was the top 15 U.S. Marshals most wanted fugitive. And so for so many reasons, I mean, we didn't know if we're going to get the new audience on ID. We didn't know if people would call in with the tips. And that just proved it with a very difficult case, a case where the guy had been on the run for multiple years in another country, and we still got him. Jeffrey Forrest will always stick out to me as well, a case of a serial child predator who took off to Mexico. And why it sticks out to me is because we have a loyal fan. We have such great loyal fans in Mexico. We had a loyal fan spot him in a Walmart just at the beginning of the pandemic and recognized his tattoos and actually sent us pictures of the tattoos. When the U.S. Marshals went down to pick him up, they extradited him back here to the United States, and he was sentenced to 99 years in prison. So another great direct capture from the show. I think those two will really stand out. And then this season, Adrian Farios. This guy had over 80 child victims that he was using a technique called sextortion to exploit. And a guy that was sentenced to 30 years in prison, the judge, while he was waiting to go to prison, had sent him home to get his affairs in order. He's a young 22-year-old, I believe. Of course, he's a flight risk. He's got no family, no job. He just cut his ankle monitor off and hasn't been seen since. He's looking at 30 years in prison. And again, over 80 child victims that we know of. That's a guy I want off the streets.
Absolutely. And what is end game for you in terms of your career? What's your ultimate goal, whether it's with the show, whether it's with the organization or something else? What is your end goal that you want to do?
I think my end goal is to enact as much meaningful change as I can. I've come to realize that, unfortunately, it takes oftentimes tragedy to enact meaningful change. And the tragedy of my brother's death changed the way we look for missing children. And it changed the way this country deals with missing kids, looks for them, provides resources. I want to continue that and continue enacting change in my brother's honor and his legacy, whether it's helping to find missing children, fighting exploitation, preventing future victimization, or finding bad guys, you know, catching these wanted fugitives on in pursuit. I want to be able to continue to enact positive change in honor of my brother.
And how could viewers and fans like myself or others help you with this goal?
Well, you know, tune into the show, but also, you know, support and engage. Post on social media. Post images of the missing children we're featuring. Post images of the fugitives that we're looking for. All it takes is a simple act. I know it might seem trivial or, you know, it might seem like just such a simple task, but by sharing that image of a missing child, all it takes is one person to make that connection, to spot that image, and to do the right thing and make that call, and you could be the reason a child is reunited with their family. You could be the reason a wanted fugitive is captured simply by making that post on social media, engaging with In Pursuit, engaging with the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children, and helping to enact that change.
Nice. You're actually inspiring me to do a missing persons segment on my own website. That way I could help you as well.
Oh, absolutely. Look, at missingkids.org, at our website, we have our full database that's open to the public. Anybody can go there, geographically search a missing child from their area, post on their social media. It really is a way to make a difference and an easy way that people can make a huge impact.
Well, I'm going to do it. TV Grapevine will now have a missing person section on their website for you guys.
I love that. See, enacting change already.
Yes. And you mentioned before, to switch topics a little bit, you're doing your cooking. And I remember last time we talked, you were doing that curry dish. What else are you cooking these days?
Oh, man, I'm all over. I mean, I've been perfecting a char siu pork that I love. It's a Chinese dish. I'm getting more into smoking meat as well, brisket and shoulder and all that. Man, I'm still loving my sous vide machine. Doing a lot of sous vide steaks and other items. And I'm trying to think of what I've been kind of going with my holy grail this year. I think it was ramen broth last year, good tukatsu ramen broth. Let's see, what is it? I'm trying to think of what my pursuit is right now. I think, I'll tell you what my culinary goal has been this year, to tell you the truth. It's using less ingredients.
Okay, nice.
But refining the technique. So doing more with less. So I kind of found myself overdoing some recipes and some things with so many different flavors and competing flavors. And what I've come to realize is some of the best chefs in the world make the most exquisite food with just a few simple ingredients, but it's all done right. It's all about the technique. So it's not, it's more with less and sort of getting out of your own way and letting the ingredients do the talking. So sourcing the good ingredients, but really applying that proper technique and letting each one shine individually. I think that's been my holy grail this year for cooking.
Nice. Have you ever considered writing a cookbook, or you just do it for fun?
I do it for fun. I think maybe that's something, maybe a cookbook down the line, but my wife and I have this imaginary restaurant that we own and operate, and we are, every time I'm bringing home a new dish or I'm going somewhere, I come home, I try to refine that recipe, and if it's good, we say, yep, that's going on the imaginary menu. Of course, we don't have this restaurant yet, but we have the menu, and we've got some great stuff on it.
That is such a cute idea. I love that. That sounds like so much fun.
Yep. We'll take the first couple bites and look at each other and go, yep, this one's going on the menu.
That is adorable. I love that. And where can we follow you guys on social media so we can continue to help you with bringing these people to justice and get updates on the show?
Absolutely. So the In Pursuit with John Walsh Facebook page is a great resource. We're constantly updating that page with new information. Of course, there's an Instagram as well. But on the Missing Children side, you can go to missingkids.org. At Missing Kids on any platform, Twitter, Instagram, TikTok, you name it. We're at Missing Kids on pretty much every platform. And lots and lots of updates there, whether it's missing children's cases or resources for prevention education, you name it, we're throwing it up there, and it's a great way to follow along with what's happening at the National Center. But again, also the In Pursuit with John Walsh Facebook page is a great way to get updates on the cases that we're covering.
Wonderful. And I'll tag you guys in all the missing kids posts that I do so you guys can see them as well.
Perfect. Thank you so much. That's great.
Yeah, thank you. It's a pleasure to speak to you as always, and I can't wait to speak again soon.
Likewise. Thanks for reaching out, and thanks for the chat. It was great.
Yeah, no problem. Good luck, and we'll talk soon.
Awesome. Thank you. Bye now.
Bye.